So today we are continuing our series of discussions on the principles that have been elaborated in Sri Jaiva Dharma. And we notice that Jaiva Dharma has been derived by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is sourced from Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are quite aligned, because Srila Prabhupada used to quote Srimad Bhagavad Gita while giving Bhagavatam classes. He will quote Bhagavatam while giving Srimad Bhagavad Gita classes. He used to interchange these two because they are 100% aligned. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam's connection is such that one who understands the Bhagavad Gita would then have the ability to approach the Srimad Bhagavatam with the proper approach, and they would also be able to lead life based on Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Then they would have a better chance of understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. This is very critical for us to understand. Yeah, it is said that one learns how to live from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita and one learns how to die from Srimad Bhagavatam in certain ways. Yeah, so approaching Srimad Bhagavatam for the final transition requires an understanding of Bhagavad Gita, and they are aligned. Now, what we need to also understand, that for the past three sessions we have been talking about certain practical applications of the knowledge from scriptures. And the practical application fundamentally is for us to be able to align ourselves in line with being able to pursue a full and wholesome devotional service process. In other words, aligning our life to Krishna's desire, aligning our life to the desires of the acharyas. This has been our quest for the last few three or four sessions, where we have been constantly talking about how to realign life. And this is more so for those of us who are outside, because we are somewhat enmeshed and connected to material energy, and material energy can cause certain agitation, can also give us certain impermanent goals. So we talk about that. We talked about it in the last few sessions. We said there can be impermanent goals which can be set up by coming in touch with material energy. Now, as we proceed further, we also need to understand that in our process, Mahaprabhu has given us three different aspects of coming fully in touch with devotional service. The three full aspects are for us to be able to have sambandha gyan, which is understanding the relationship between jiva and Krishna, understanding the relationship between Krishna and maya, understanding the interaction of these three personalities, Krishna's internal potency, Krishna's external, then the jiva. This is sambandha tattva. Then the question arises as to what is the need for knowledge if everything is going to be derived from Krishna's mercy? What is the need for knowledge if everything is going to be derived through the practice of devotional service? In one sense, we can say that knowledge is required, because while we practice devotional service, we could be completely distracted because we are in touch with material energy. In other words, we could take up a process which is not recommended by Shastras. I can give you two examples. We are going to look at several examples today. These are subtle differences in approaching Krishna. And these subtle differences in approaching Krishna in our mindset can practically put us in a different track altogether and can take us away from the objectives given by our acharyas. We have to be very careful with those. So we'll just take a look at the most famous shlokas of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Chatushloki. The four shlokas in the second canto, ninth chapter, 33, 34, 35, 36. This is an extraordinarily important four shlokas. And why is it given early on? Because these shlokas primarily talk about sambandha tattva. They are talking about sambandha tattva. Sambandha tattva is being spoken of in the Chatushloki. What is Krishna sambandha? What is Krishna sambandha with maya? What is the jiva sambandha with Krishna? And what is the connection between all of these? How does the jiva come out? It is being given in these four verses in the Chatushloki in the second canto. So today we are going to just focus on that. We are going to take precept from those particular four verses. One moment. So it's 33, 34, 35 and 36 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, 33. Aham evasam evagre nanyat yat sat asat param paschadaham yat etascha yo vasishyetaso smi aham. Translation: Brahma. Krishna is addressing Brahma. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. It's quite interesting that when Lord Brahma manifested himself from by the will of Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, there are Purusha avataras. There is Mula Shankarshana. This is Balaram in Dwaraka. Then there is the first quadruple expansion. Second quadruple expansion. Then you have Mahasankarshana. From Mahasankarshana, these are the four Purusha avataras who come. Three Purusha avataras. There is Karanodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then there is Shirodakshaya Vishnu. These are three Vishnus, and they are managing creation. The causal ocean, Karanodakshaya Vishnu, he is manifesting universes within him and he is releasing them. He appears as Sri Advaita Acharya in Gaur Leela. He appears as Advaita Acharya in Gaur Leela, and as a consequence, because his glands is what impregnates material nature with the jivas, he feels quite compassionate and guilty because he has sent the jivas into creation. As a consequence, he wants the jivas to come back to the spiritual sky. And that is the reason why he starts praying to Lord Gauranga. This complete Krishna Sambandha cannot be given by anybody. It can only be given by Srimati Radharani. And that is the reason why Lord Gauranga has to descend. It is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. This complete Sambandha cannot be given even by Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean, because that Sambandha is not available. Krishna Sambandha is available in the heart of Srimati Radharani. That's the reason why Gauranga is so special, and these deities, Panchatattva, are so special, because Lord Gauranga is Radharani. It is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So that is why Mahavishnu, Sri Advaita Acharya, Karanodakshaya Vishnu, he has to offer prayers to deliver the jivas. He has to sit down and say, you have to descend, because that complete Sambandha Gyan is not available with me. You have to descend because you have it in your heart. You have the complete extent of knowledge of connection to Krishna. You have the complete extent of bhav, all the sentiments, all the emotions, the extent of Krishna prema is in your heart. You have to descend. So Radha and Krishna have to come together as Gauranga, because without which it was not possible. And Sri Advaita Acharya is appropriate in offering prayers because he feels compassion. He's saying, I have sent these jivas. I glanced into material nature. And because I glanced into material nature, it's my responsibility to offer prayers to Gauranga, because I have to redeem these jivas. So it's quite interesting that even Mahavishnu does not have access to what is being distributed in the streets of Slovenia and Croatia and the West and India and everywhere else. Isn't it interesting? It's quite a paradigm that he has to descend and he says, I can't do it, you have to come. This Gauranga Mahaprabhu is so special that even Mahavishnu can't access that prema. He has to come and he has to deliver, he has to do this. It's quite interesting. So this entire Sambandha Tattva is practically discussed in these four shlokas. Now, Krishna is saying, it is I. And why is this being said here? Krishna is basically saying that I, the person, the personality of Godhead, is the origin of Brahman. I am the origin of the particular super soul. I am the origin of everything. This is basically a statement that is being made. And this statement is quite critical. And the reason why it is critical for us, even though we have philosophically understood it, this Sambandha Tattva of understanding Krishna is very important for us, because we can make mistakes whilst we are in this movement if Sambandha Gyan is not fully available. We can make mistakes. What is the aspiration of the Gyani? What is the aspiration of the Karmi? We spoke about it in the last two sessions. The aspiration of the Karmi is to worship Krishna for a specific benefit, and by worshipping Krishna for a specific benefit, he feels ingratiated and he wants to move forward. So basically, Krishna is put to the side, and we also noticed it when we first gave the Bhagavatam class with Hamsa Guhya prayers. Daksha, Prajapati Daksha, is praying to Krishna. Krishna appears in the eight-armed form, and in the eight-armed form, he comes with weapons in each arm. Whenever the deity appears with weapons, they are going to remove obstacles in one of the directions of the material universe. If there are eight arms, that particular form is going to remove obstacles in eight different directions. Once the directions are free of obstacles, Prajapati Daksha's problems are solved. He goes away to engage in procreation and populating the universe. Krishna goes away. This is Karma Yoga. This business of using Krishna to attain something and leaving Krishna afterwards is a great defect. That is why Krishna says very clearly that I am the source, I am the origin of everything. He is very clear here that I am a person. You have to approach me as a person, and you also have to understand that I am the source of the super soul. I am the origin of Brahman. So he is making the clarification. As devotees, we have to be very careful in having aspirations in our heart while we worship. This is the reason why Srila Rupa Goswami is so clear. He is saying, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. You cannot practice pure bhakti when there are other abhilashas. So one has to constantly check. There's another reason for it, and the next three shlokas will explain that, the Chatushloki. It will explain that. There is another reason for Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. Yeah. You cannot get disentangled from material energy without the help of Krishna. So even the karmi requires Krishna to achieve his objectives. The karmi requires bhakti to achieve his objectives. As a consequence, bhakti is superior to all kinds of activities. And when we make bhakti subservient to karma, then we lose bhakti. What has been given to us is Krishna Sambandha. It is the highest quality of connection to Krishna. That has been given by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada has given us the ability to have Krishna Sambandha in Goloka. So when we make it subservient, that's a contamination. It has to be rejected, that kind of our attitude. It's a very dangerous attitude. This is a philosophical issue. That is the reason why Jnana is required, because one needs to understand Sambandha Tattva. One should chant, and by chanting and reading, one understands Srimad Bhagavatam and understands Sambandha Tattva. This is the first point. The second point is we also look at the Jnani. Now let's look at the second shloka of the Chatushloki. Rite ritam yat pratiyete na pratiyete chatmani tad vidyat atmano mayam yat basho yata tamah. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Krishna is practically talking about Maya in the second verse. In the first verse, he spoke about himself. In the second verse, he is talking about Maya. Let's read the third and fourth. Then we can go on to our discussion. Third verse, 35. Yata mahanti bhutani bhute succha vachesva anu pravistani apravistani tata teshu nateshu aham. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. So now Krishna is talking about the interrelationship between him and the material energy. First, about him. Second, material energy. Third, interrelationship. Fourth, and this is the last one. Etavad eva jigyasam tatva jigyasunatmanah anvaya vyatirekabhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this. In all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Here he is talking about the process. He says, don't stop with Brahman. Don't stop with yogic meditation of the super soul. Reach me. I am the person. And you should reach me and understand me by understanding me, understanding my external energy, understanding my relationship with external energy, and also understanding me and external energy and my relationship with you, either directly or indirectly. What does it mean when he says directly or indirectly? Directly is by understanding by our own efforts. Indirectly is coming in touch with, you know, the spiritual master. You can actually use both things. It can be applied to both circumstances, directly and indirectly. You need to approach authorities for us to understand. Now let us understand the problem with Gyan and what happens with Gyan. This is not such a big problem in the Western world where Srila Prabhupada, you know, the Western world in one sense is very fortunate because they don't have any baggage. They don't have a previous conception of Vedic knowledge where Prabhupada had to come, remove that Vedic knowledge and give new Vedic knowledge. In India, the problem is that there is a previous conception and understanding of Vedic knowledge. There are Gyanis. Now, what is the approach with Gyan? Gyan has this approach that I am approaching Krishna for the purpose of purification. They have understood that this is material energy. They have understood that there is this personality, but they do not accept the Supreme Person as reality. They accept Brahman as reality, and their idea is, I need to purify myself. So to purify myself, I need the deity. The karmi needs the deity to achieve his purpose. The jnani needs the deity to achieve purification. So this particular upasana, which is prayer, which is done by the jnanis in India, involves five personalities. They worship Lord Surya as a deity. And this Surya is worshipped, and then they worship Lord Ganesh as a deity, the remover of obstacles. They worship Mother Durga, Parvati, as a deity. They worship Lord Shiva as a deity, and they worship Vishnu as a deity. These are five. This is Pancha Upasana. And the purpose of worshipping these five deities is for the purpose of, basically, the understanding is that our entire creation is made of five material elements. There is earth, there is water, there's fire, there's air, and there's ether. Now, when there are five material elements, my body is made of these five material elements. Our bodies are made of these material elements. Our subtle body is made of the subtle form of these material elements. This chair is made of their specific material elements. Everything in this particular creation is made of material elements. So the understanding is that when we are born and we take birth, there is a distortion of abilities of these material elements. They are not pure. They are distorted in their particular combination in the subtle body and in the physical body. There's a distortion. Shastra is very clear saying, you have to gain knowledge through these senses. But if these senses themselves are defective because they are combinations of these material elements and the combination is not proper, then the person can't gain knowledge. They are not pure. You see? So the idea is, let me purify myself. How many times have we heard it after coming into this movement? What is this purification? The purification is purification of the material elements according to some. Yeah? So they approach Krishna for the purification of material elements. Lord Surya purifies Agni Tattva, the fire element. Ganesh purifies the material element of earth. Then you have the purification of the water element by coming in touch with Mother Parvati, Mother Durga. You know, the mother rules water, emotions, everything else. Lord Surya rules Agni, we know that. Yeah? Ganeshji, everybody worships him to remove obstacles. Why so? Because obstacles, while engaging in activity on the spiritual, on the physical platform in the material world, are created due to Prithvi Tattva. There is a misunderstanding of how to fix things. There is a misunderstanding of how to execute activities. As a consequence, he is worshipped to remove the defect out of the material element of earth. Then the fourth personality who is worshipped is Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is worshipped to remove the more subtle element of air. What is air? Can anybody define how you can define air as a material element? We do this. This is namaste. I'm not talking about the actual action of namaste. When I'm holding my hands together, if there isn't a cushion of air between these two, I can't move my hands back. It can get stuck. There is a cushion of air between all of us in different ways, which is a cause of separation. Which is the cause of separation. So this particular tattva, Vayu tattva, is a cause of separation. When that tattva becomes defective, people leave their bodies. There's separation in the universe as well. There's a collapse of organs. There are so many defective problems which happens. Have you seen the wind blowing and hitting a mountain? Over a prolonged period of time, the size of the mountain can reduce. Okay? It destroys it. It destroys and reconstructs everything. Air is very powerful. It can just destroy. You know, basically it is very, very heavy where it hits against buildings and so on. Over a period of time, they become quite damaged. So the point we are trying to make is Lord Shiva is worshipped to maintain the body and to purify the wind element. He is worshipped for knowledge on the wind element. This is the wind element. This is also understood by the sense of touch. The senses are connected to the different element. The sense of touch is Vayu Tattva. The sense of sight is Agni. The sense of smell is Prithvi. The sense of hearing is Akash, which is the next Tattva, the sound. So when you say ether, that is sound and that is connected to hearing. So these are five elements, and this ethereal element is governed by Lord Vishnu. They worship Vishnu for the purpose of purifying this ethereal element. Now what do we understand from this? Their point is, once I worship all these deities and I have purified myself, I am done. I have no use for any of these deities. That includes Lord Vishnu. Beyond the material sky, once I have purified the elements, I have gone beyond the material sky, I don't need any deities. I don't need any form. Brahman is there. Now when we approach our deities, if we constantly meditate on the fact that we have to purify our existence, we have to be relieved from some kind of distress by purifying ourselves. We have to be relieved from some kind of contamination. If we develop this very metaphysical attitude while approaching the deities, that I am offering arati, I am offering a lamp to the deities, I am offering incense to the deities, I am offering different kinds of elements to the deities. This is understood in Pancharatra, that each of these offerings, if I am offering a lamp to Krishna, it purifies my vision. It purifies Agni. If I am offering water to Krishna, it purifies my water element. If I am offering Naivedya to Krishna, I am making an offering to Krishna, then it purifies all the elements together. It purifies everything together. So the point we are trying to make here is that we have to be very careful about philosophical conclusions that remain in our head while we are approaching the deities. What is the conclusion of the Acharyas? What is Krishna Sambandha according to the Acharyas? Do our Acharyas ever tell us about purification while you approach the deities? Do they talk about it? What is it which our Acharyas tell us? What is it our Guru Tattva have told us about this process? There is purification, undoubtedly, but is that the objective of serving the deity? Let us hear this. Is that the objective? What is the objective of serving the deity? Sambandha. For us to be able to serve the deity, we are trying to develop a relationship. If you break it down into a metaphysical aspect where you are coming in touch with the deity for purification, this is contamination, this is jnana. It causes problems. You see how subtle this is, a subtle understanding, because we talk about it as Vaishnavas all the time. We want to be purified, we want to be purified. What is this purification? This purification is occurring when we come in touch with the deities. Undoubtedly, when we are offering a flower to Krishna, the Akash Tattva is increasing. There is no doubt that there is a certain purification which occurs every time we offer one element associated with the material elements. You offer a incense, Vayu Tattva, the air Tattva in our body, in the subtle as well as the physical body, is getting purified. When you sit for a fire sacrifice, you are getting purified in terms of the fire element in the body. You see, the fire increases in the body when you sit before a fire sacrifice. One who is worshipping Lord Narasimhadev, who is full of fire, he develops deep Agni in their heart. There's a lot of Agni which comes into the body of the person. This Agni is not useful for grihasthas. For brahmacharis it is useful. Yeah, they can burn all the desires. That is the reason why mostly brahmacharis and sannyasis and yatis worship Lord Ugra Narasimhadev. There's too much Agni. Yeah, this Agni basically burns everything away, all the desires. This Agni is useful for us, there's no doubt. There is purification. There is purification of material elements when we come in touch with the deity, but that is not the process. That is really not the objective of coming in touch with the deity. We should be very careful about this very subtle understanding, because there's so much knowledge available on the internet that we can go and grab that knowledge and then combine it with our worship and start the misconception that I'm approaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm approaching the divine couple Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and this is being done for my purification. Yes, there is purification. The purification that is occurring is that there is an increase in Sambandha Jnana. We are increasing Krishna Sambandha. We are not approaching the deity as a jnani. I want to purify myself, so I'm worshipping you, Krishna. Then what about it after you purify yourself? What is going to happen to this Krishna after you purify yourself? Then the question has to be answered. What will I do with my deities after I purify myself? Where is the Krishna Sambandha? This is a very, very careful study. Srimad Bhagavatam is so clear here. Krishna is saying, approach me. I am the person. I am the origin. For the past 2 days, I have been talking about planning to integrate our lives with Krishna consciousness. How is that relevant with tattva? It is relevant because Krishna is making it very clear in the Srimad Bhagavatam that I am the source of the external energy. He is making it very clear. I am the source of the internal energy. This is me. You have to approach me. Krishna is making it very, very clear in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I am the source. So when we say that he is the source, we are also saying you can't solve your problems by keeping him away. The more you integrate material life with Krishna, the more we integrate our life with Krishna overall, the more we integrate our objectives with Krishna, the greater the ability for us to be freed from the entanglement in material energy. This is the purpose of making this statement. There is a philosophical basis. There is a philosophical basis. If we plan to solve our problems in life, independent of devotional service, it won't work. It won't work. Our problems are spiritual. Our problems are not material. Our problems are not material, they are spiritual. Because there is Sambandha Tattva. Krishna says, I am the origin. Yeah? He says, you are a part of me. You are Tatastha. You are on the bank. I can help you. So we want to develop Krishna Sambandha more and more. We want to reorient life and we want to look outside and say, my life is for the purpose of devotional service. Let me reorient it. Because we can't solve material problems on their own merit. We can't solve them. We can't. If you try, it won't work. It won't work. It will work sometimes, but it will be a huge distraction. It will be at the cost of Krishna consciousness. So one has to be very careful in their approach to life. We don't want to lose a treasure that has been given to us just to pick up a few pennies. Yeah? We're carrying a big bag of treasure. A 2 pennies or 3 pennies from the treasure falls on the ground. It is very dark. It's a forest. Is it safe to stop and put this treasure down and start picking and looking for those pennies, wasting time where someone can come and assault us? It doesn't make sense. So in a similar fashion, we do not want to focus on things in such a way that we lose out on something even big. This is the reason why Sambandha Tattva and Jnana is important. That is the reason why scriptural reading is important. Srila Prabhupada said, go out and preach. He also gave us another instruction. He said, you should chant every day. You should eat Krishna Prasadam. We can't chant without Krishna Prasadam. Without Prasadam purifying our tongue, we cannot chant. We can't taste Harinam. It is not possible. If we eat food which is cooked by non-devotees, then we are contaminating our tongue. We can't taste Krishna Prasadam. We can't taste Krishna. Nama cannot be tasted. So Prabhupada said that. Srila Prabhupada also said, read every day. Why? Because this reading improves our Sambandha Jnana. This distortion in our mind of approaching him for nonsense will go away. Krishna, I want to be purified. Why do you want to be purified? Oh, because I'm in so much distress. I have understood this material energy is false. I have understood that at the time of my birth, everything is distorted. I have all the senses in a very defective way. Because my senses are defective, I can't function in this world. And I want to purify those senses. So I'm going to come to you. I will purify my senses. Then I can be less miserable. This is the logic. Yeah? And then once we are less miserable, and once we are free from all of this, this is moksha. Jnana basically leads one to leave the material world. It never asks for Krishna. There's a danger in this approach. There's great good fortune in simply approaching Krishna to serve. Because the master knows how to take care of his servant. There is a prospect of surrender. Trinadapi sunichena taro riva sahishnuna. We approach the master, we surrender, we serve, and he purifies us, he takes care of us, he does whatever is required to us within the body, outside of the body, and he really makes sure that we get what we need to get. It is such a clear and very lucid concept given in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Chaturshloki. Krishna is saying, I Material energy, my relationship with material energy, my relationship with you, material energy and I, this is Sambandha Tattva. Each day as we chant sincerely, the Sambandha Tattva increases. We understand this. We understand how to deal with the world. We understand who is Krishna. We understand who we are. It is so dangerous. It is so dangerous to approach this universe without this knowledge. For devotees, this is most required, most required. We need to understand how to approach life. The fruitive desire comes from a certain level. And jnana comes from a certain level. Both of these can come. Both of these can come. And then there is this feature of those who perform yoga, I'm not talking about hatha yogis, for the purpose of concentrating on the super soul. Krishna says, I am the origin of the super soul. Approach me as a person. If all you're going to do is have darshan of me, what is the point? I'm a person. Let's interact. We'll give you an example of the difference between Brahman, personal worship, and super soul. You see? Perception, jnana. When the time comes for Rajbhog Aarti at 12 noon in any temple, any ISKCON temple around the world, there will be people sitting here, and some of us, the curtain is closed, some of us know there is jnana in the mind that basically bhoga is being offered to the deity. Some of us who have deeper perception know what is going to be in the bhoga. Okay, the first category is bhoga is being offered. This is jnani. He knows there's something being offered. That's it. It is there. There's power. It has no form. It is there. And then the next level is the yogi. He knows that, okay, the bhoga is being offered. There are puris. There are two varieties of sabjis. There are pakoras. There is kheer. There's some rice. There's some dal. There are some other wonderful things. All of this is there. This is basically the yogi. He has seen Krishna. Okay? But then, does it satisfy us? Can there be ananda? Can there be bliss if we just know something? Is there bliss in just knowing that there is a plateful of bhoga on the other side? There is no bliss. Where is the bliss if you don't taste it? That is the idea of coming in touch with Krishna. The person who is making the bhoga is tasting Krishna consciousness. The person who is serving is tasting Krishna consciousness. The person who is going to be honoring prasad is also tasting Krishna consciousness. This particular full connection with the personality occurs only in when we accept Krishna in the personal form. This full connection occurs where there is intense bliss. Krishna is basically saying, don't get into processes which can distract you. Don't go there. Be very careful. So understanding of Sambandha Tattva is very, very important. With this Sambandha Tattva, then we have the ability to approach Krishna in the right attitude. This right attitude of approaching Krishna comes after receiving Sambandha Tattva and we are chanting Harinam. We come into devotional service, and as Krishna Sambandha increases, we also develop a deeper sense of behavior. So moral behavior, proper behavior, and interaction with Krishna in the proper way, interaction with devotees in the proper way, this is abhideya. First, there has to be sambandha, and when Krishna sambandha increases, the way to react and way to interact with Krishna, way to interact with the devotees, way to interact with the world, that is abhideya. This is abhideya. We're going to talk about abhideya perhaps in the evening. This is behavior of Vaishnavas. Why is Vaishnava behavior bad? Vaishnava behavior at times is bad because Krishna Sambandha is low. The Sambandha Gyan is poor. The idea of relationships is very, very poor because they don't understand the relationship with the deity. They don't understand the relationship with Krishna properly. They can't relate to Vaishnavas. This is abhideya. Relationship with Vaishnavas and the deity and everybody else is abhideya. This is abhideya. How can there be proper abhideya when there is poor Sambandha Gyan? How can it be there? Do we understand why our defects are coming up? There isn't. The Kanishtha Adhikari thinks the deity is the only one. The Vaishnavas, who cares? Yeah? This is. This is exactly where it comes from. There is poor Sambandha. There's only one part of the understanding. There's only one relationship which has been understood. There is only one section which has been understood. So behavior develops as Sambandha Gyan develops. So our acharyas have concluded. that if we endeavor for behavioral changes, that effort for behavioral changes should be concomitant, or it should be in combination with serious chanting of Harinam. Serious chanting of Harinam is our path. As we chant Harinam very sincerely, and our sinful reactions and everything are removed, and Harinam becomes offenseless. What is offenseless chanting? Offenseless chanting is Namabhas. Offenseless chanting is a dim reflection of the pure name. It is not the pure name. It is the offenseless chanting of Harinam. Offenseless chanting of Harinam grants liberation. Offenseless chanting of Harinam happens at the highest level of the mode of goodness. There is still some contamination from passion and ignorance. This is Namabhas. This can grant liberation. The yogis and the gyanis, they sit for multiple lifetimes striving for liberation. We get liberation at an early stage. We get liberation at an early stage. One feels liberated. Kleshagni. Our acharyas use the word kleshagni. The kleshas, the afflictions to the body, afflictions to the mind, through the material energy, they stop. Literally, the perception of afflictions are over when one reaches the point of nishta, becoming fixed. And how do we become fixed? And what is the symptom of fixed devotional service? The symptom of fixed devotional service is that basically the person is completely free of distress, kleshagni. And good fortune starts rising, shubhada. These are two leaves that sprout when one chants. Two leaves are sprouting. One of them is the good fortune of coming in touch with Krishna, that knowledge comes. The other leaf is becoming free from distress. This is given to us very, very early. Very early. But as we become free from distress and we start receiving more and more, then we also become very careful with our behavior. So our behavior has to be reinforced by coming in touch with tattva and also through chanting. Our acharyas are of the opinion that the real lakshana, the attribute, the characteristic of a devotee, the real lakshana, the swarup lakshana of a devotee is complete dependence on Harinam. Someone who chants Harinam with very great deep attachment, that is the actual swarup lakshana of a devotee. If that person, if we don't want to be looking for characteristics such as, is this person humble? Is this person, you know, of one type or the other? Is he courteous? There are so many different descriptions given of good behavior in Shastra. That is not taken as a criterion. That is abhideya. Good behavior and proper dealings with Vaishnavas comes with dependence on holy name. It's a process. Krishna Sambandha comes through dependence on holy name. We are reading about Krishna, we chant, and then we develop proper character and behavior with Vaishnavas. This is abhideya. Without understanding it, one cannot attain Krishna, which is prayojana. So there is Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Without proper Sambandha, one does not know what to do, because they can be following even a wrong process. They can have misconceptions in their heart about the process. They can have a misunderstanding about the process. They can approach Krishna with certain issues and then get entangled in karmakanda without knowing that they are entangled in karmakanda. Yeah? So this is so dangerous if you do not know tattva. So Krishna is saying, you approach me through tattva, you approach me through shastra, you approach me through those who have understood shastra, those who can speak shastra after understanding and applying shastra. One has to be able to live shastra, not just hear and read. We have to live shastra. Living shastra is to depend on Harinam. Good behavior develops. This is abhideya. Good Vaishnava etiquette, good behavior. This is abhideya tattva. Because the Vaishnava is the carrier of bhakti. If we don't deal with each other nicely, if we don't deal with Guru nicely, if we don't deal with the relationship with Guru very carefully, then our knowledge of Sambandha is poor. As a consequence, we are not able to engage in abhideya. There's a defect. Do we understand the connection now, dear devotees? That without Sambandha Tattva and with proper chanting, without proper chanting, one can't understand Krishna, one can't understand Maya, one can't understand the relationship between Krishna and Maya. We think Maya can be handled on the own. We think Maya can be approached as a separate energy. These are misconceptions that come over because there's an improper understanding of Sambandha Tattva. So very early on, why is it that Srimad Bhagavatam says the Chatushloki, the four shlokas is called the Chatushloki? 2.9, 33 to 36. Why is it that these are the most important shlokas in Bhagavatam in one sense? There is a Paribhasha Sutra. That's a different story. The entire essence of the Bhagavatam is explained where he says Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. That is the essence. But these four shlokas are the foundational shlokas. Why is it given to us as a foundation? Because there is Sambandha Tattva. If we don't know what to see, what are we going to see anyways? Someone is looking at a rope and they're thinking it's a snake. Or they're looking at a snake and thinking it's a rope. Yeah? If we don't know what to see, how are we going to see properly? This is an issue. We have to understand that this is required. Sambandha Tattva is required. Then there's chanting. When there's serious chanting, good character, good qualities develop on their own. These are the gifts of Harinam. Humility develops on their own. So it's an automatic gift of Harinam. So one needs to understand how to proceed in Krishna consciousness. We can't get into and apply knowledge which is outside without the fear of getting contaminated by such knowledge. We should be very careful. Because there are those who worship Krishna for the purpose of purification. But can we worship Krishna for the purpose of purification? No. This is Gyan. Be very careful with misconceptions. It is there. I want to purify my existence because I am suffering. Someone knows my Prithvi Tattva is disturbed. Because in my body and my subtle body, my Prithvi Tattva is disturbed. I can't function in this world. I can't engage in Karma Yoga. So let me worship in a certain way so that I get that fixed. Problem. Similarly, you also have an issue with, for example, you know, mental disease. What is mental disease? Mental disease is the quality of not being in touch with reality. Does everybody agree with the definition? The fellow who has mental disease or the person who has mental disease, they are not in touch with reality. This whole idea of being in touch is ruled by the air element, Vayu Tattva. When the Vayu Tattva in the body is disturbed, then the person loses the ability to remain in touch with the world in a proper way. They are not in touch with the world. They are not in touch with reality. This is a direct inference. So there's a disturbance. The Ayurvedic physicians, they start treating Vayu. There are yogic processes to treat Vayu because they know that this is causing mental disease. They know how to moderate it. They give herbs, they give diet to treat Vayu and Pitta and so many other things. The point I'm trying to make here is there's a lot of knowledge and we are coming in touch with a lot of knowledge as devotees now because the internet is full of knowledge. But if we don't approach the internet after reading Srila Prabhupada's books thoroughly and taking shelter of Harinam, we can get very, very badly sidetracked. This is dangerous. There is a lot of information out there. If we take it, if you are an expert, you don't get sidetracked and you can use it in preaching. If you are not an expert, and if the Sambandha Tattva is weak, we could take a process which belongs to the Jnanis and apply it to our understanding and look at a deity saying, I'm offering you a lamp, let me be purified in my Agni Tattva. I'm offering you an incense, let me be purified in my Vayu Tattva. I'm offering you a flower. When they offer fire sacrifices, they offer a flower and they say the Akash Tattva is purified. What do? We chant mantras. We chant Harinam. There are subtle differences in the Vedic approach. What is being given in the internet, I'm just saying, using that as a reference, is that there's a lot of knowledge available now. If one is not careful and one does not understand what Prabhupada has written, one does not approach the internet with Srimad Bhagavatam's protection, there's a danger. We could get waylaid. We could take inference from so many things which are available there and we could be completely, distracted. So we should be careful. So Sambandha Tattva is a must. One chants, one reads Tattva from Bhagavatam, one comes in touch with Bhagavatam. That is the reason why Srimad Bhagavatam says, come in touch with me daily. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Nityam. Nityam means eternal. Yeah, it also means every day, come in touch. When you constantly come in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam, it purifies our understanding of our relationship with Krishna. And then we are chanting in a proper way. We are worshipping in a proper way. It's quite dangerous. It's quite dangerous not to have this understanding. That is why Tattva is very important. In Jaiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has extracted the essence of Sambandha Tattva, of Abhideya Tattva and Prayojana Tattva. He has rearranged it in a manner where everybody can understand and read. And this happened in early 19th century. It is an exciting, exciting book. And we can see that everything has been taken from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll stop right here. We'll quickly summarize. Today's session, we took up the Chatushloki of Srimad Bhagavatam. We basically wanted to say that the Chatushloki is an explanation of Sambandha Tattva by Krishna. Krishna is talking about Sambandha Tattva in the Chatushloki. If this foundation of knowledge is not available, one cannot see. So he is first of all giving us Sambandha Tattva, saying everything has its origin in me. I am connected to Maya, but yet I am aloof from Maya. Maya is my energy. You are connected to me, and you interact with me in this way, and you interact with Maya in this way as well. So the interrelationship between Maya and Krishna, interrelationship between Jiva and Krishna, interrelationship between Krishna, Jiva and Maya, this is Sambandha Tattva. This is Sambandha. If you don't understand how to interact with material energy, then we will get completely covered up, which was the purpose of our talking for the last 2 days. We spoke on a more practical sense, that if we don't approach material energy with Krishna's protection, we can't solve our problems. There are no material problems. There are spiritual problems. There are spiritual problems. There are misunderstandings. There are no material problems. When these misunderstandings are taken out, offenses stop. When offenses stop, everything we chant goes towards building our connection with Krishna. There's a 100% contribution, and as a consequence, there is fast advancement, and we understand who we are in Krishna's world. We develop quick sambandha. This is the purpose of initiation. We are being initiated where the Guru is passing his knowledge to us. He is giving us his sambandha jnana. We are very fortunate to be initiated in Srila Prabhupada's line. The maximum understanding of Krishna is with Prabhupada. Maximum. Yeah? And he is giving us this connection. So we are so fortunate to be initiated in his line. And the Sambandha Gyan is coming to us. And then we also spoke about having an understanding of the subtle differences between Gyan, Karma and approaching our deities. We spoke about the dangers of not having this understanding while approaching the deities. We also spoke about how we can improve our behavior. Abhideya is behavior. Abhideya is conduct. Abhideya is interaction between Vaishnavas and with Vaishnavas and the deity. This is Abhideya. How do you serve on your own? You serve with Vaishnavas. Without understanding Vaishnava culture, without understanding Vaishnavas and being able to interact with Vaishnavas, what is it that we can offer to Krishna anyways? This is Abhideya. When one has complete Sambandha, is engaging in proper Abhideya based on the Sambandha Gyan, that is action in Krishna consciousness. For such a person, Krishna will intervene and he would make all arrangements to go back. Then there is Prayojana Tattva. So tonight, I was asked to talk a little bit tonight about Grahasthashram and so on, but I thought I will continue further. We will talk a little bit about Abhideya Tattva. We'll talk about Vaishnava etiquette as given in Shastra because it is necessary. Vaishnava etiquette that is produced because of pure chanting. That is why our acharyas have given. Our acharyas have been pure chanters of the holy name and they have given us Vaishnava etiquette from their experience of pure name. So Sambandha is pure, so their idea of Abhideya, behavior, is pure. We don't need help, behavioral manuals from, you know, manuals from outside. We don't need that. Our acharyas have given us behavioral aspects for Vaishnavas and codes and etiquette based on Sambandha Tattva. After attaining pure Sambandha Tattva, depending on Harinam, you know how to behave. When all of that is done properly, then there is Prayojana, attaining Prema itself. We will talk tomorrow morning about that aspect, to the extent to which we can, because without attaining it, how can we talk? And I'm not qualified at all, whatsoever, but I can talk a little bit about the Shastric aspect of it. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll see if any comments or questions are available. We'll take them. Yes.
In the beginning, I think you spoke about how for the processes of jnana and karma, you also require some bhakti. So how is it so? Like, if they cannot be successful without the element of bhakti. How is it like in practical how to understand that in a practical sense. What's the mindset of a yogi when he includes that element of bhakti?
It's first of all, it's a philosophical misunderstanding with which they approach the whole process. So they do worship Radha Krishna. You will find Sri Sri Radha Krishna worship in many temples in India. If you look closer, they will claim they are Vaishnavas. If you look closer, you will find they are impersonalists. Okay? Because they worship Sri Sri Radha Krishna. They worship the divine couple for the purpose of saying, bhakti allows me. Their understanding is bhakti is sentimental. Their understanding is, I can't concentrate on nothing. Even though nothing is superior, I can't concentrate on nothing. So I need a deity so that I can concentrate on a deity. Yeah? And then when I am concentrating and serving the deity with certain elements, those elements in me, in my subtle body, in my gross body, will become purified. And as a consequence, I get liberation. Because purification from material energy is liberation. This is the concept. Some of them who are simple-hearted, we shouldn't condemn everybody. When they come in touch with the deity, and they are not very philosophically sound, but they yet approach the deity to worship, some of them develop bhakti, and bhakti overpowers their whole concept of liberation, and they start looking for answers. And that is how a jnani progresses to become a Vaishnava. But that happens with the coming in touch of a person who is having a lot of faith. They need a catalyst. They need someone who is filled with faith and whose Harinam is going on. You see, when they are chanting in the streets, and if someone is in prema, and they are chanting in the streets, the naam they are chanting is premanam. It is shuddhanam. That enters into the ears of so-called personalities and shatters their beliefs. And suddenly they wake up saying, this is something so special. That is why Mahaprabhu chanted even though he was in the robe of a sannyasi. And everybody during Mahaprabhu's time thought, you are a sentimentalist. You are a sannyasi. You are supposed to be talking jnana. You are supposed to be discussing Vedanta. You are supposed to be discussing philosophical points. You are acting as a sentimentalist on the streets calling upon Harinam. What is this? You see? But Mahaprabhu demonstrated that this is what you guys need. You see? Here I am dressed in your own clothes, but I have found that I have a superior process. This is what you guys need. You see? So this is very important to understand that bhakti is required for them too. So for example, someone has a material objective of obtaining wealth and they worship the deity with great pomp and fervor. They put a lot of effort into worshipping the deity. So there is a certain level of bhakti required for them to achieve that end. You know, but that bhakti basically is, if they are sincere and if they are simple enough, can that particular karma yoga can turn into bhakti yoga. So they come in touch. So this is quite true. In reality, 7.16 of Bhagavad Gita is saying very clearly, Chaturveda Bhajante Mam, the four kinds of categories of people who are coming in touch with me, Krishna says, they have many desires. So this is quite bona fide. We come in touch with God with many desires, but later on, we are in the presence of those who are quite pure. As a consequence, their purity comes into our hearts and destroys this desire for material desires. And as a consequence, we become devotees as well. So it's a bona fide process. Yeah? It is okay. Krishna says you are magnanimous, even if you approach me for wealth. The points I was trying to make today was that after coming and after getting initiated, after receiving all this knowledge, after receiving all these blessings, if we start approaching the deity, if we start approaching our process to solve our problems only in certain ways, then we are following an inferior path. That was the point I was trying to make. And this is a disadvantage because we are disregarding, and this comes due to lack of knowledge. That is the reason why the 10th offense in the holy names is that having material aspirations even after receiving so many instructions on the subject, this is happening because the person has a lack of knowledge, there's also aparad. So when all of this goes away, then that is offenseless chanting. That is namabhas. When we chant offenselessly on the streets, we give an opportunity for people to hear offenseless chanting of namabhas. When we chant pure name, they get connected to Krishna. So that is the reason why when Srila Prabhupada started chanting in New York, it was broadcast throughout the world. That is pure. So Harinam is so important that it has so many different aspects to it. But philosophical understanding is also important. Otherwise, you know, we could come in touch even with material energy, we could develop aspirations which are defective. Sure. Any other point? Anything else? Comment? Question? Yes, Prabhu.
So could you shed some light on the importance of association of devotees, which, what kinds of devotees we should associate with, and how to do it properly?
Yes. How to do it properly we perhaps can discuss later today, but what kind of devotees? You see, fundamentally, every objective of ours is centering around Nam. A sadhu is one who can inspire us to chant nicely. Someone who can inspire us to read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all about Harinam. Someone who can inspire us to particularly want to explore living in Vrindavan or having that consciousness of living in Vrindavan. Someone who inspires us to worship the deity nicely. There are so many wonderful pujaris who do such amazing deity worship which are inspiring. So the point we are talking about is a sadhu's definition and association is all about inspiration. And that inspiration is what we are thriving on. So this is very important for us. So that is the primary quality. Inspiration. Inspiration to chant. If anyone were to ask, what is it that I have to fix? Just focus on japa. It is so simple. Just focus on japa. Because japa, nicely done, will take care of everything else. This is shastric. This is not speculation. All sinful reactions are taken away. All pious reactions are taken away. All seva aparad is taken away by Naam. It is so wonderful. It is so simple. So it's such an amazing process. Sure. Yes, Mataji.
You say the final action of devotee is chanting of holy name, and then that qualities of devotee develop according to that. But sometimes we see maybe, you know, like devotees chanting after a long time or putting some effort, but still they keep their habits from before, like some not so good traits of behavior. So how come, do they just take, does it takes longer time, that's the case, or what's going on there?
There are, yeah, see, in our Sangha, and I'm referring to ISKCON as a whole, in our Sangha, we have devotees of different categories. There are some who have been engaging in devotional service for 2-3 lifetimes. When they come in touch with devotional service in this lifetime, even though it appears as if they have come in touch at the age of 30, they might have come in touch at the age of 20, we do not know. They have been engaging in devotional service in the past. As a consequence, they take off. Because they're already in touch, they have credits, they can draw from the previous experience, because there are good and bad experiences in our heart. And both are dormant. When we encourage the good comes out. When we encourage the bad comes out, depending on association and impulse. So there are devotees who take off. Then there are devotees who have just come in touch with the process in this lifetime. For them, it's a deeper struggle because they're developing the samskara of being a devotee in this lifetime. They're struggling. As a consequence, it takes longer for them to clear the sinful reactions. It takes longer for them to have faith. It takes longer in so many different ways. In reality, the issue with bad behavior is also a lack of knowledge. That is the reason why you hear it almost in every class. The Vaishnavas talk about humility, they talk about good behavior, they talk about sadhacha, they talk about so many things again and again and again and again. And the reason it is repeated is because it is required. So one understands that there's something missing in me. At least at some level, the person is conscious. You hear Srila Radhanath Swami talk about humility every class. Humble behavior, every class. And he would not even go very deep into it. At times he would just mention it in every class that this is required. Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is he understands that if you constantly keep saying this at some level, it starts entering into the head that this is required and one starts learning more and more about it and changes their behavior. So the point is bad behavior comes from a lack of knowledge. Bad behavior also can come from sinful reactions. Some people are just like that. They are just very rough with others. You know, we can see human beings. They're very rough with others. And all of this can be taken out by Harinam if it is sincerely done. But If they start offending Vaishnavas coming into the environment, then they slow down. It chokes their behavior. It chokes their progress. So I guess what we have to summarize on this answer is that, number one, there are degradations of Vaishnavas. Some are slow, some are fast because some have already done the work and some are doing the work now. Number two, there's a lack of knowledge. So Shastric reading is a must so that they develop an idea of what is proper behavior. And it has to come from Shastra, either the book or the person speaking Shastra. It can, both are good. The third point is very importantly being able to avoid Vaishnava Prat, because that stops everything. Sure. Any other question or comment? Srila Prabhupada ki.